Okay. With page 10:10. Okay, last time we started Perek Yudalid. Last time we learned Bonim Atam Lashem Elokeichem. Okay, last time we're learning Banu Matam Lashem Elokeichem. The whole thing in the Neshama with the child, the whole analogy that we gave. Okay, but then the Torah says like this: Lois is great to do. You should not cut yourselves. They used to cut themselves when people died. They would cut themselves. Lois says, "Simu karcho beinenechem lameitzin." You're not allowed to put a bald spot between your eyes for a dead body. This is what they used to do. But without elaborating, it's a lot of halachic issue with this. Lois is great to do. The Gemara learns also means don't make agudes, don't make separate groups. Now, if you're in a shul, don't have this group doing this, and this group doing this, and this group doing that. So a lot of things, it's a complicated, it's a big argument that halacha, how it works exactly. But it doesn't only mean not to cut yourself. The Gemara says also means leisasu aguda aguda. You should make different groups. Everybody is to be achtus. Everybody should be united. Okay, this is where we're up to. Pasuk Beis, page 10:10, four lines in the end of the page. Ki am kodesh ata l'Hashem alekecha. Why is this? Because you're a holy nation to Hashem, and because you're a holy nation to Hashem, you shouldn't do all these things of hurting your body. Ubacha bacher Hashem, and in you Hashem chose. Okay, liyesli la'am segula, to be a treasured people for Him. Mikolo amin, from all the nations, asher al pnei adam, which in the face of the earth. And this is a very interesting expression. What does it mean that Hashem says you are a treasure? You can elaborate on this a lot, but just a little bit. Why are the Jews called the treasure? What's a treasure? I mean, it's a funny expression. Holy, great. What does it mean, a treasure? No, but that's not what a treasure means. It's interesting, the definition
expensive,
of a treasure.
Something so expensive.
No. A person has food. The purpose of food is to eat it. Yeah. Okay? You have clothing. The purpose of clothing is to wear it. Yeah. There's always a purpose of something that you have. A treasure, when a king owns a treasure, he doesn't use it. He doesn't show it. What's the purpose of it? What's the purpose of it? It's just because it is what it is. It's great. It's great. It's not for because of a reason for something else. It's great because by itself, by its essence, is great. The Torah says that the Jews are called Am Segula. Am Segula means that there's an inyan in a Jew just from the fact that he's a Jew. Even if they do mitzvahs, they don't do mitzvahs. Because when a Jew does mitzvahs, they're doing it because, okay, so now they're doing what Hashem wants. Because of that, Hashem likes you. You don't do mitzvahs, Hashem doesn't like you. I mean, so to speak, yeah. The definition of a treasure means there is no purpose but the thing itself. What does this mean? In the beginning of Pirkei Avos, before you start in the actual Pirkei Avos, the Mishnah says, "Kol Yisrael yesh lo chelek l'olam haba." Every Jew has a part in olam haba. Shenamar, because it says, "Va'amech kulam tzaddikim." You all tzaddikim. And then it continues, Leilam Yeshu Aretz, you'll ever, forever inherit Aretz, which refers to Ganei, the Olam Abba. And then the Pasuk says, Neitzem Matoi, it's the planting of my hands, it's the flourishing of my planting, Maisa Yodai, it's the work of my hands, Leispoir. A Jew's greatness is that God made him a Jew. period. And that's why a Jew is even greater than Torah. We learned that many times, why a Jew is even greater than Torah. If it's a choice of Jew or Torah, Torah got to go, but the Jew stays. So what it says, that Hashem says to the people, Li yis li la'am segula, and that's why it says, B'cha b'char Hashem. If you remember last week we spoke, the neshama is God's child. The body, because remember it has to be mamish equal, the body God chose. And that's why when it speaks about b'char Hashem, Hashem chose, meaning it's not because of a benefit that you have. If something is better than, if A is better than B, then it's not free choice choosing A over B, because A is better than B. So it's not free choice. Free choice means they're exactly the same, and there's absolutely no reason why I'm picking you. But because I'm picking you, that's it. There's no cause. And that refers, like we learned last time, to the body of the Jew that looks like a guy, and yet Hashem chose that this body should be Jew, like we learned last week. But because it's speaking about Bechira, the Pasuk says, Liyesler la'am segula, to be this treasure, like we said before, you have money in your house, the purpose is to buy things. You have clothes, the purpose is to wear. A car is to drive. A treasure that you have, there's absolutely no purpose in it. The king never shows it. The king never uses the treasure. It's from generation to generations. What's the purpose of the treasure? Nothing but having it. He can't use it. He doesn't use it. So it's not even worth anything, really. Something he can't use is like, there's no value to it. The king is not using it just because it is what it is. Not in order for something else. The Jew is the Am Zgula Mikolo Amim, the treasured people from all the nations, Asher Apnei Adam. And therefore, the purpose of a Jew is to bring godliness in the world. The purpose of a non-Jew in creation is to civilize the world, that a Jew should be able to do the chosen job that they're given to be this Am Zgula, this chosen people. Okay. So therefore, the Torah says like this. You're not, because a Jew is holy, they can't rip out hair for bald spots, and if when somebody dies, and they can't cut their skin, and they have to be holy. And therefore, by the way, this whole issue is a big issue in today's world. Who owns my body? You know, I own my body, therefore I could do with my body whatever I want to do. I want to have an abortion, I'll have an abortion. I want to transgender, I do transgender. I want to do this, I do whatever I want, I do. It's my body, I can do with it what I want. This body, God says, is not yours. Right. It's mine. I'm lending it to you. Right. In fact, there was a Levi last night, so somebody spoke, he said, there's a famous medrash, Rav Meir on Shabbos. Rav Meir had three children. One Shabbos, two of his children died suddenly. So his wife, Brudia, the famous Brudia, was Rav Chanina ben Tradjan's daughter. She's a very brilliant lady. So she didn't want to tell him on Shabbos that his two kids died. So she covered the kids and put the dead bodies, and she put them away that he shouldn't see. After Shabbos, he made Avdallah. So she came to him and she said to him, I have a question to ask you. If somebody gives you a treasure to watch, gives you something to watch, very expensive, something very, very, a big treasure to watch. And a while later he says, can I please have it back? So she asked her husband, Rav Meir, so what's the halach? Do you have to give it back? He said to her, what, are you crazy? Of course you have to give it back. It's not yours. It's guy's treasure. He asked you to watch it. So when he wants it back, if not, you're stealing. It's his. Of course you have to give it back. So she told him.
Oh my God.
She told him, God gave us this treasure, these two boys, and God asked for them back. So the measures of the mayor fainted, and she said, why did you faint? That's the story over here. God gave us the treasure. Instead, what am I bringing out with this medrash? The medrash tells us we are on loan from God. And Hashem wants we should return our bodies not worse off than we got them. Yeah, we got them nice and young and we return them old. But as far as damaging the body, we're not allowed to. Hurt the body, we're not allowed to. For a person just to cut themselves for no reason, cut themselves. It's forbidden according to Torah. Even if it's not for a mess. If it's over a dead body, that the Torah forbids explicitly that you can't. But even not for a guy wants to cut himself. A guy wants to do...
Tattoo,
that's clearly you're not allowed to do. But I'm saying even a guy wants to do, give you an halacha, plastic surgery. You can't just do plastic surgery. You need to ask a halacha question if I'm allowed to do it. Because you're doing surgery on your body. It's not your body. You're damaging. No, a lot of times it's allowed. I'm not saying it's not allowed. There's even a question about, you know, piercing your ears for earrings. Yeah, there's a letter from the Rebbe about this. Somebody asked him if you're allowed to pierce your ears. But it's mentioned in halacha. Why? Because it hurts. When they put in the earring, you know, they pierce the ear, it hurts. And halacha. So the Rebbe writes that the enjoyment, the pleasure, it definitely outweighs the pain in that case, and it's not dangerous, whatever. But I'm saying, a person's body doesn't belong to us. Hashem gave us, chose this body. Hashem says, this is my body, I'm lending you. You have a mission to accomplish. Your mission accomplished, then you go back better than the way I gave you. You don't accomplish your mission, you're worse off than the way I gave you. So then, what?
What would you say about circumcision?
No, God said that you have to do.
About what?
Circumcision. No, because it's a very interesting point. God creates us with the foreskin. Yeah? And he said, and the Gemara uses the expression that the Orla is mu'usa, is despicable by God, the foreskin is despicable. And therefore God says, I want you to cut it off. Yeah? So the obvious question is, if God hates it, make us without it, and finish, it wouldn't be a problem. Right? Most halachically, women are considered born, the Gemara says in Aveda Zora, Nashim command the Malia Damya, that the women are considered circumcised. In other words, whatever men need to, the women have it by themselves. But the question is, why does Hashem say, and by the way, it's interesting, by a child, not an adult. The halacha is by a child, the pain is part of the mitzvah. To put anesthesia, that the kid shouldn't feel the pain, is not allowed according to halacha. Part of the mitzvah is to feel the pain. But over there is a whole different. That is to remove the foreskin and to be bound up in the physical sense with God. So that's the mitzvah. That's the self is the mitzvah. Well, like by Yom Kippur, the Torah says you need to afflict yourself, fasting and whatever. But that's the mitzvah. But otherwise, a person is not allowed to damage themselves in any way because God said, it's my body, I chose you, and you have a mission, and that's it. Okay, now, next starts the whole concept of kosher. Kosher animals, not kosher animals. Torah says, Leisechal kol to'eva. You cannot eat any despicable thing. Okay? Now, then the Torah goes into the animals. You could eat animals, you can't. So what does the Torah mean by including this pasuk? You cannot eat any abomination. So from here, the Gemara in Chulin learns out that an abomination means to do things that come through a sin. Anything that a mitzvah that comes through a sin is not a mitzvah. But the Gemara gives an example over there. He brings the band down at the bottom. You know, if you have an Eretz Yisrael, if you give birth to a firstborn animal, it belongs to the Kohen. So today there's a whole issue what to do with it, because it still applies today in Eretz Yisrael, even outside of Eretz Yisrael. But a Bukhar, the firstborn animal, belongs to a Kohen. So what do? You let it graze until it develops a blemish, because it's not fit for a sacrifice anymore, it's blemish, and then you could shecht it, and then you could eat it, and so on. But it says, what happens if a person inflicts a wound on this firstborn animal that he should be able to eat it? Nothing. So Hashem says, That's
trick.
That's called to'eva. That's called an abomination. He says, if someone sinned by inflicting a blemish in a firstborn animal to make it disqualified, it's an abomination, Rashi says, Rashi brings this down, and therefore cannot be eaten. Okay? Or like he says, if you cook meat and milk together, Hashem says it's an abomination to eat it. Because Hashem despises anything that you're not allowed to do, is by Hashem, it's an abomination. Hashem hates it. So therefore you're not allowed to do it. Okay, now the Gemara, the Pasuk says like this. Zeise behema shetechelu, these are the animals that you're allowed to eat. Sherd, an axe, sevim, sheep and a goat. I'm sorry. Sevim means a sheep. Veseizim and a goat. The Torah is going to say the kosher animals. And I would just want to make... There's a bunch of things over here. The proof from these psukim, by the way, and in Parsha Shmini, that we read a few weeks ago, a lot of the psukim are repetitious. And the Gemara says why the Torah is repeating it if it just said it 3 weeks ago. There's a lot of animals in the world. Now, there's X amount kosher and X amount not kosher. Right? The Torah tells us which animals are kosher that you could eat because that's the lesser of the amounts. The Torah is going to enumerate whatever amount, the 10 animals, whatever it is that the Torah is going to say. But because there's more animals which are not kosher, the Torah is going to say the animals which are kosher because the Torah wants to always make it short and sweet. And from here, the Gemara also learns out, halacha, that when you teach, you should teach it short and straight to the point. The Gemara in Pesachim La'olam Yeshana Adam LeTalmidei BeDerech Tzara. A person should always teach his students in a short way. And this they learn out from these psukim. Because the Torah says kosher animals, non-kosher animals. The Torah enumerates the kosher animals, and certain things we'll see the Torah enumerates the trefa animals, because it's the lesser amount, and therefore that's what the Torah tells us to do. Now we all know that kosher is important, okay? But there's another thing, it's a Rashi in Parsha Shmini, that we learned a few weeks ago. The same pasuk is really in Shmini. Many of the psukim are exactly the same. Some of the animals, they change names. But Rashi over there says it, and Rashi obviously doesn't have to repeat it because he said it over there. And like the Rebbe said once when he said that sicha and the Rashi, he said, people read through a Rashi, and you don't even stop for a second to realize, hey, there's something strange going on over here. Rashi says in Parsha Shmini, Zoysachaya, again, the same thing, Zoysachaya, these are the beasts that you could eat. So Rashi says, in Hebrew, when you say ze, or feminine, Zois, means Mada Be'etzba, you're showing this. If it's not in front of you, you can't say this, you can say that. But this, by definition, means, I'm showing it to you and I'm saying this. So Rashi says, in Parsha Shmini, Melamed Shaya Meisha Oiches Bechaya, when Meisha Benu said the name of the animals and beasts, he held each one in front of him, Umara Esam Yisrael, and he showed him to the Jews, and he says, Zeis Teichlu V'Zeloi Sechelu. This is Rashi says, because the Torah says this is, and also the Torah says, Zeis Abehima Shetechelu, yeah? The Torah says Zeis, the Torah teaches us that Moshe Rabbeinu held every animal in the world and showed him this you can eat, this you can't eat. And the Rebbe says, stop to think for a minute. Moshe Rabbeinu was in a desert. He wasn't in the zoo. And the Rebbe said, I remember when they said, that there are animals that exist in, like a kangaroo, right? This one is in Australia. Where did Moshe Rabbeinu get a kangaroo? Or a lion or a tiger? In the Midbar. Just stop to think, where did he get those weird animals that exist in only parts of the world?
In desert, talking about that.
In the desert, they didn't have all these animals. The Torah could tell you about a chazer. That doesn't mean they had chazenim in the desert. In the desert, you don't have pigs. You don't, definitely not kangaroos from Australia, or koala bears from Australia. I mean, these things didn't exist all over the world. So the Rebbe said, and the Rebbe said, this Rashi is learning with a Ben Chomish Shonim Lemikra, with a 5-year-old kid, and the kid learns the Rashi, and he understands it very simply. Because when God says, teach Torah, whatever needs to be done happens. You need to show an animal, the animal will appear, and you'll be able to teach it to him. Whatever it is, you'll be able to show him, Zayta Chaya, this is the animal that you can eat. That's issue number one. Issue number two, there's what's called Chaya, and there's Behema. Okay, Chaya is beast, Behema is animal. Okay? What's the difference halachically, or factually, between Behema and beast? Behema are domestic animals, like that you keep in the house. Sure, seh, even the chayasir, ayol, tzvi, v'yachmer. No, tzvi is a chaya. And then you have animals that are not domestic. That is called chaya. Okay? Now, there's a difference halachically between chaya and behema. One difference is when you shecht a chaya, I'll give you an example. A deer is a kosher animal. But a deer is a chaya, not a behema. Okay, it's not. So he says like this. And Rashi says, by the way, right away over here, Ayo tzvi v'yachma. So Rashi says, the Torah starts saying zeisa behema, and then it mentions beasts. So Rashi says, in the Gemara, because it teaches shebehema v'chaya is all b'chaya b'chal behema. But there's two differences in halacha between chaya and behema. When you shecht the behema, when you shecht the cow, today, you shecht the bull of beef, yeah? You don't have to cover it with blood. You don't have to cover the blood. When you shecht a bird or a beast, if you shecht the deer, then you have to cover it with blood.
Why?
Torah says. No reason for it.
Cover it with air.
With earth or ashes. It doesn't mean, the Gemara says, even though it says...
For the cow, you don't have to do it.
No, you don't have to. Because it's a behemoth, only chai. Kisri dam ba'afor. But the Gemara learns out, afor means anything, not only dirt. It could be, today they use from the wood,
the wood chips.
Sawdust. They use it from the sawdust. That's what they cover today with.
Deer also.
And also the fats, okay? The fats of behema is allowed, and the fats of a chai is not allowed.
The deer is.
What?
The deer. You have to cover?
Huh? Yeah.
The deer. You should cover the black?
Yeah, you have to cover it.
Not a goat.
Not a goat. Any, that's what I'm saying. It's not any of the, a goat is, the first three things in the pasuk here, the first three things, shur, seich savim, v'seizim, is all, I'm sorry, the animal chalev you cannot eat, you can eat the chalev of a chaya. I'm sorry, I mixed up. The animals, like, the fat, the certain fats, there's chaylev, it's called treburing the meat. Treber is to butcher it, and the hind quarter of the animal, and certain fats of an animal are forbidden to be eaten. But a chaya, that you could eat it. And a chaya needs, the blood needs to be covered, and the behema doesn't. But generally speaking, in this context, behema and chaya is the same thing. As far as, that's why the Torah says, Zeisa behema shir techelu, and he mentions right away, Ayol tzvi v'yachmor, the hart, the deer, the yachmor, akay dishen, usay v'zomen. The reason why in the English it's the same word as the Hebrew, the Mepharshim say because we don't know exactly what these animals are. We don't know what they are.
Rabbi, there is two kinds of fat. One of them is harder, one of them softer. But the hard one, they call it, I don't know, our language, they call it pea. You cannot eat.
Yeah, that's the chalev. There's chalev and there's shuman.
Kosher animal also. This kind of
there's chaylev and there's shuman. That's the difference.
So the chaya doesn't have chaylev, right?
A chaya has chaylev, but you can eat it. Part of chaya is the non-domesticated.
Deer.
Deer is not domesticated.
But it's kosher.
Yeah, it's kosher. It says clearly, this is the animals you can eat.
Goat, sheep, goat.
Yeah. Okay, and then the Torah gives a rule. Chol behema mafreses parso, or any other animal, okay, that has split hoofs, v'sheisa shesa is completely separated into two hooves, and mala geira babahima, and it chooses cud, eisa tochelu, that's what you're allowed to eat. Okay? And he brings down over here, as noted, that we don't know exactly what he's seeing. Some yachmer might be a fallow deer, aku might be an ibex, trust me, dishin is rima, type of antelope, tio is a wild ox, or other people say it's zamir is a giraffe. Some people say it's a zamer, v'zamer, yeah? Some of Farshim learn it's a giraffe, some of Farshim learn it's a wild goat. By the way, a giraffe is a kosher animal. You can't shecht it.
It's hard to do that.
With the long neck, you don't know where to shecht it exactly.
You need leather, huh?
That's why you can't, a giraffe, theoretically it's kosher, it's a kosher animal, but you can't, there's a problem with the shechita.
You have to put a ladder.
You need a ladder. No, it's also complicated to shecht. Okay, so basically the Torah says like this. If it chews its cud and has split hoofs, so that is a kosher animal. If it only has one of the two or none of the two, then you can't. Okay, I want to read some more psukim, and then if we have time we're going to explain this whole thing. And if not, we'll do it next week. Okay. But this you cannot eat from those that bring chew their cud or have a separated hoof. In other words, the terms that I'm now going to enumerate animals that have only one of the two signs. Okay, terms that you can't eat. So gomo, the camel, a nevis, the hare or rabbit, there's a shafan and the hyrax, kimala geira hema. They do chew the cud, but ufar salehi frisu, they don't have split hoofs, so tmeim heim lachem, therefore they're tummy to you. Because they only have one of the two. The camel chews its cud, but doesn't have split hoofs. Then, vesachazir, a pig, ki mafris parsahu, it has split hoofs, but it doesn't chew its cud. Tamehu lachem, ibsonim leisichelu, you can't eat the meat, uvinavlasim leisigo, their dead carcasses are tamehu. We'll get to that later, what that means. It's a very interesting thing. The commentaries point out, the Torah enumerates a few animals that have only one of the two signs. Okay? The chazir has kosher feet, but doesn't chew its cud. The camel and the other guys chew their cud, but don't have split hoofs. Nowhere since the creation of the world till today did they find any other animal with one of the two signs, besides the one the Torah mentions. This is one of the, not that we need proof of it, but in the Sfarim that prove Torah is from God, that you must say it came from God. Because how can the book written in the desert with great authority say a statement that they can be proven wrong? The Torah enumerates all the animals in the world that have one of the two signs. The only animal in the world that has split hoofs and doesn't chew its cud is a pig. The only animals that chew their cud and don't have split hoofs. Okay. Like the camel, the rabbit, and the hare, and the. So they say this is a remarkable thing. Think about it. Moshe Rabbeinu is writing something in a book that he's opening himself up to a can of worms that people can prove him wrong. Never in history has been proven wrong. So the Chinuch and others, the Rishonim write that this is one of the logical proofs But it's interesting, the Mepham Mepharshim explain that having one sign is worse than no signs. Having one sign is worse than no signs. Why is this? Explain like this. Okay, yeah. The Klayaka over here, well, not here, in Basha Shmin, he writes like this, that the Torah first, when the Torah mentions, and this is very interesting, when the Torah mentions the animals that have only one of the two, the Torah first says the kosher sign, and then the not kosher sign. Like by the camel, the Torah writes, it chews its cud, but doesn't have split hoofs. First it says the kosher sign, and then the non-kosher sign. By the pig, the Torah says the opposite. It has split hooves, but doesn't chew its cud. So the Koyakir says, why is the Torah mentioning from when it has the two, one of the two, the Torah always mentioning the first one. Okay? So he says like this. The presence of a single kosher sign makes it worse. Why? There's an expression in Yiddish, Chazer kosher fitzen. A chazer always likes to show its kosher food, kosher sign. There's an expression, a pig lays in the mud, and it always sticks up its hoof to see, you see, I'm kosher. I have split hoofs. I'm a kosher animal, look, I have split hoofs. That's a faker. An animal that has none of the above knows it's none of the above. Sometimes you have people that are fakers, and they have one good quality with a bunch of bad qualities. They say, look at my good quality. Majority of you is no good. But they always show the good sign first. So he says, the presence of one sign, hypocritical people always try to publicize their occasional good deeds instead of concentrating on getting rid of their faults. He says, even this dishonesty, he says, it's called treif. Dara says, even if you have a kosher sign, but if that's what you're showing off, rather than your no good, then your defects, you should know the Dara says, that's treif. You need to, and the fakers, the Dara says, we don't like the fakers. If you, you know, the chazer is the symbol of treif, because, and it's interesting, from all the non-kosher animals, yeah, if somebody wants to always give an example of not eating treif, they always use the word chazer. They never use camel. They'll never use horse. Horse is also treif. I mean, you know, the people in the, oh, he eats horse. I mean, they serve horse meat in treif restaurant. Because chazer is the only animal that has split hoofs, shows it, and says, look, I'm a kosher animal, when it's really treif. So that's the reason why everybody uses the analogy of a pig, because that's the worst of all the things, is this pig. Now, we know, based on what we learned, there's two things that make an animal kosher. There's a very interesting halachic, what's called in yeshiva language, called a chakira. A question, a philosophical question. The chewing its cud and split hoofs, is that what makes the animal kosher? Or the animal is a kosher animal? How do I know it's a kosher animal? Because it has split hoofs and chews its cud. In other words, is that what makes it kosher? Or that only is what shows it's kosher? Is that what I'm saying? There's a difference between halachically in this concept. But the Drogachev has a lot about this. Is chewing the cud and the split hooves, is that what makes it kosher? Or the animal is kosher? How do I know it's kosher? When I see split hooves, and then I know it's kosher. But that's not what makes it kosher. What's the difference? There's an interesting Gemara. The Gemara says, what happens if a kosher animal, like a cow, gives birth to a cow that doesn't chew its cud or has split hooves? Or, what happens if a pig gives birth to an animal that does chew its cud and has split hooves? Is that animal going to be kosher? You remember, I don't know if you remember, many years ago, they came out with the kosher pig. It was a whole thing. They found a kosher pig that had split hooves. Remember? I mean, chews its cud. The whole thing years ago. The whole thing in the Yiddish world, they found a kosher pig. Until there's a little, maybe 25, 30 years ago. And then they realized the Baba Meisim. The Gemara says a rule that anything that comes from a kosher animal, in other words, if a kosher animal like a cow, yeah, gives birth to an animal that has only one of the two, it's still kosher. If a pig gives birth to an animal that does both, it's still not kosher. The Gemara says something coming from a treif animal is treif. That's by the way. It's not only that. Pig's milk is treif. Why is pig's milk treif? Because it comes from a pig. And if a pig's treif, anything that comes from it is treif. An ostrich lays eggs. But because an ostrich is not a kosher bird, ostrich eggs are treif. Or caviar. Yeah, the real good caviar is from sturgeon. Right? It's the what's caviar? It's the eggs
of the
sturgeon. So you can have salmon caviar, which is kosher because it's salmon eggs. But if you have the real good Russian caviar, everybody knows is the sturgeon fish. So because it's the eggs of the sturgeon fish, it's not the fish, you're not eating the fish, you're eating the egg. Anything that comes from a kosher animal is kosher, anything that comes from a treif animal is treif. But there's a difference if it makes it. Are these the signs that make it kosher? Or it's only, how do I know it's kosher? By seeing these signs, I know the animal is essentially kosher. That's issue number one. Issue number two, it's another very interesting point. By the way, Malagata, you know, they bring down scientifically a very interesting thing over here. What's the definition of chewing its cud? Let's see if he says it here.
It's not wild. Like
no. It's just
two stomachs.
Not two stomachs, more. Here they bring down that. Try to identify it's eaten as ruminants. That's, by the way, the nice word for cud-chewing animals, yeah? There's four chambers. In fact, there's a picture of a cow, and it shows the picture of the four stomachs. It says like this. The food is called the rumen, and then it's called the reticulum. There's a kadesh, basic cases, hemsis, and cava. Okay? The cud, the food, regurgitated back to the mouth from the stomach, then passes from the chamber to the duodenum, which is another part of it, the beginning of the small intestine. In addition to the chambers of the stomach, so there's four stomachs, but that's where the animal is always chewing, because they chew it in one stomach, and then it comes up back into the mouth, and then they chew it again, it goes to the next stomach. So this is the definition. That's why if you look at a cow's mouth, it's always chewing. Go look at it. It's always chewing because, huh?
Yeah, I think you're right.
What do you think I'm right? It's not me, it's Titus. So the question is like this. What is the lesson in chewing its cud and having split hoofs for us? Okay, it defines a kosher. We need to be a kosher animal. In order for us to be a kosher animal, we need to chew our cud and have split hooves. What does split hooves mean? The person, or the animal, right? By the way, a person is not a kosher animal. No, really.
Chewing
a person,
Huh?
We don't have spleen. We don't chew or cut. No, halachically, a person is not a kosher animal.
Cannot eat it.
You can't be a cannibal, according to halacha, that eat humans. The person is not a kosher animal.
Any animal eat the meat is kosher or not?
No, it's not. Chews and cut. No, a lion eats meat, and it's not kosher.
No, kosher animal, if eat meat, is kosher or not?
If the animal eats meat?
Yeah, it's kosher animal. Eat meat. It's kosher. No. Is kosher or not?
If a cow eats meat, is it kosher?
Why not?
But he doesn't eat meat.
Let me ask you a question. You know fish?
Eat the fish.
Eat fish.
China.
Now, a salmon, if it's a big fish, yeah? Or tuna, it's a big fish. Not the canned tuna. The tuna is a big fish, yeah? What do they live on? Smaller fish. What do you think, they eat the fish only with a hechsher? Only fish that have fins and scales? They'll eat any fish. They'll eat any fish.
Chicken eats worms.
Or cow eats a lot of treifa stuff. But it becomes its flesh, so it's not treif anymore, and therefore you can eat it. You're allowed to eat it because it became, it was digested and became part of the cow. So it's not.
I'm only worried about the mad cow that came from feeding the animal flesh.
Yeah, but that's nothing to do with kashrus. It's just to do with health. If it's not healthy, you're not allowed to eat it anyway. But it's nothing to do with them. Okay, so anyway, like this. Split hooves represent a split of the earth that we're stepping on. That means a person, when it comes to physical things, needs to not be totally indulged in the earthly things. The Torah says you need to have split hoofs. You need to open it up a little bit, not to be overly indulged in earthly desires and earthly things. And chewing its cud is a very interesting lesson. Sometimes, you know, people say, I heard that already. I did that already. What do you want me to do it again? Chewing its cud means you hear it, you hear it again, you do it again, you keep doing it over and over and over and over. That's what makes a person kosher.
Speaking also?
But only in good things.
So I'm sorry, splitting the...
Split the hoofs means the hoofs on the ground, right? Which represents the person, the animal, right? The person is directly on the ground without any separation, meaning that refers to a person's overly indulged in earthly desires. Split hooves means there's a little bit of space between you and the earth.
Is that where you have arch? At the bottom of
the arch, yeah. Separate a little bit. So it says, split hooves means you need to not be overly indulged in the physical materialism. And chewing his cud means that you to do over and over and learn again and learn again and, you know, do it again and do it again. Not say, okay, I put tefillin on yesterday, why do I have to do it today? You have to chew your cud, you have to do it again. And again, keep doing it. So these are the a few of the lessons of this whole thing. Now, it's an interesting thing. For a non-Jew, treifa meat, or not kosher, is 100% good. It's 100% good. There's absolutely nothing wrong with a non-Jew eating pig, or cheeseburger, or whatever. There's absolutely nothing wrong. For a Jew, it's not healthy. Spiritually, it's not healthy. In fact, the Mefarshim explained, that's what it says, Zeis HaChayah, Zeis HaBehemah. Behema also is an acronym. It's brought down in Kilas Yaakov, a Sefer in Kabbalah. Basar Hayered Min HaShemayim. Behema stands for Basar Hayered Min HaShemayim. Meat that comes down from heaven. Meaning, a person knows that the food God gave us to eat, the purpose of eating the food is to elevate the food. The purpose of God giving us the food is, and therefore, I'm not getting into the political issue of vegetarian or vegan or all those different types of things, but the bottom line is that people that don't want to eat meat or eggs or fish or whatever it is, because they don't want to have cruelty to animals, is just the opposite by eating them. The whole purpose, and that's why Behemoth stands for Basir Hayedid Min HaShemayim. By the way, it's also an acronym for Baruch Haba Melech HaMashiach. Behemoth also stands for Baruch Haba Melech HaMashiach. But it also stands for Basir Hayedid Min HaShemayim. The meat that comes from heaven. What does this mean? David HaMelech says in Tillim, David HaMelech says in Tillim, in Kuv Zayin that we say in Haidu before Pasach Leo Friday afternoon, he says, Re'evim gam tzmeim, the people are hungry and thirsty, nafsham bohem tisatov, their soul is enclosed within them. What's the connection? People are hungry and thirsty, the soul is enclosed within them. What is one thing? It's in the same pasuk. So the explanation is very interesting. And it says like this, why is a person hungry and thirsty? Because the soul wants to elevate that food that you're going to be eating. Re'ev, that's what the pasuk is saying. Re'evim gam tzmeim. Why is a person thirsty or hungry? Because nafsham bahem tisatav, the soul wants to elevate the food. And again, we're going to have to continue this a lot next week, but why did God make the people have the two strongest desires in the world are sexual and eating. These are the two strongest desires that God created in a human being. So the question, why did God create these two things so powerful? And also, God could have made us, by the way, that we don't need to eat. God could make we can eat, like, okay, what's a month? God can say, Rosh Chodesh, you know, every Rosh Chodesh, you'll eat for the month. Or Rosh Hashanah, you'll eat for the year. Hashem made halachically 2 meals a day, Shabbos 3 meals a day. You have to eat. Why did God make it? Because Hashem wants that this food that we're eating needs to become elevated to Kedusha. How does it become elevated to Kedusha? Very simply. There's, in Hebrew it's called Darmeim Tzemeach Chai Medaber. Inanimate, plant, animal, and human. Yeah? Contrary to dog owners, the lowest is inanimate, then plant, then animal, then human. Humans on top. The purpose of everything in the world is to become better, to become elevated. So what did God make? Just give examples. Water is inanimate. Domain. It's no life in water. What do you do with water? You water a plant. What happens to the plant? It grows. So the water became part of the growth of the plant. So therefore the water went from domain to tzameach, to plant. Grass plants are eaten by animals. It becomes the blood and flesh of the animals. So what happens? It becomes elevated from plant life to animal life. It went up. When a person eats an animal, kosher, you see what they're, yeah? So what happens to the animal? The animal becomes damu basar, it becomes our blood and flesh. So the animal actually becomes elevated from an animal state to a human state. But if a guy or a person wouldn't be hungry and wouldn't have a desire to eat, nothing is going to become elevated because they're not going to want to eat the food. And same with sexual desires. If there would be no sexual desire, nobody would want to get married, and nobody would have children, and the world wouldn't continue. So these things, because it's so important to elevate the world and to continue the existence of the world with people, so Hashem made these strong desires. So what happens when a person eats the food? They elevate it to Kedusha. But if the food is not kosher, not only are you not elevating the food, and that we'll get to next week, if it's Hashem, but the person becomes lowered into evil. Not only did you not elevate the pig, but the pig lowered you down, because it's an aveda, because it's a sin. And this is why the concept of kashrus itself, you are what you eat, the American expression is, you are what you eat, because the eat becomes part of our existence, and therefore for a non-Jew, there's nothing wrong eating not kosher. For a Jew, it's poison. It's poison, and spiritually can kill themselves. Okay, Mitzvah Shemot.